So let's do a few things, two different topics I have. One is about Yaakov's meeting Rachel. Okay? So Yaakov met Rachel with the whole well, you know, and he knocked the stone off of it, and he was really strong. Right? So basically, so the Pasuk says, I guess, Pasuk Yod, I'm jumping in the middle of the story a little bit, but this is Chav Tas Yod and Bereshis. And he saw, when Yaakov saw Rachel, the daughter of Lavan, the brother of his mother, and the sheep of Lavan, the daughter of his mother, brother of his mother. Yaakov went and he rolled off the stone off the well. And he watered the sheep of Laman, his uncle. Vayishag Yaakov Rachel, and Yaakov kissed Rachel. Vayisa eskola vayivk, and he kissed and he literally cried. Okay, he raised up his voice and he cried. Right. Okay. Fine. So why is so funny is why did he cry? Right? I mean, same way he kissed her. And it says later, you see, she was very pretty and he loved her and all that, right? You see, that was what he wanted wages. And she said, I mean, I'll marry you off. Then I'll marry off your daughter, Rachel, fine. But why did he cry? Right? I understand. It's like a funny response, right? Funny response.
In happiness, he cried that he found the one.
Okay.
It's not always easy to find somebody that you love as much as he loved Rachel.
Okay. So you could say that. That's it could be that simple pshat. Okay. Question is why when Yaakov met Rachel he kissed her and he cried. So the question is why he cried. So why did he cry? So you could say simple pshat is like what Al is saying is like tears of joy. He's happy, he met her, he loved her, she's beautiful, she was the right family. He knew it was going to work out. Maybe he saw a certain midos which he displayed, whatever it is, and he was so excited, and he kissed her, and he cried. So exciting. Like a bittersweet type of a cry. Okay, but the Rashi says, no. He says, why? If Girav, if he should suffer Baruch HaKodesh, he saw in Baruch HaKodesh, she'ena nechnasas ima l'kvura, that she's not going to be buried with him. Okay? Because she wasn't. Who was buried with him in Maras Machpelah? Leia. And Rachel. So, it's kind of morbid. Right? It's funny. So, he... Chavtas Yadav. So, he saw Ruach HaKodesh, so he's not going to be buried with her. So, he kissed her, and he was excited, but at the same time, he was crying. Because he's not going to be buried with her. And that's sad. Right? That's saddening. And another shot is because he cried because he didn't have any money with him, right? As Eliezer came with tons of money, but he had all his money taken away. I don't want to take up that shot. I want to take up this first shot. Okay? So, what do you think? Question? So, one question I feel like mentioning is what's the why is that a reason to. Who cares where he's buried? Who cares he's not going to be buried with her? So, why is that so sad? Who cares?
It's also something like they're not married right now?
No,
were they engaged?
No, they just met.
Oh. Back then there was didn't they do the tonight?
Harrison or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, but it seems like this is where they just met. He came to the well and knocked it off, and they said, "Who is that?" And he saw her, whatever, and he approached the well and that. Yeah, they asked. They came to the well and he asked, "Do you guys know Lavan?" He says, "Yeah, we know him." He says, okay, there he is, and there's his daughter Rachel coming with the sheep. So it seems like he didn't know Rachel, he just like observed her and met her. And I mean, his mother did send him, and mother probably sent him to this house to find the wife, so he knew that this is a good family, or whatever. It's not that good, Lavan wasn't so great, but whatever, for some reason it was a good family, it's the right place to go. And somehow we could say he observed her in some sort of a way, but he was very excited to marry her, but... It doesn't seem they were already engaged or anything, or anything, you know, but it seems like it was somewhat normal then to kiss her. And cry, because they're not going to be buried together. It's true, if he asked, She asked him, "Why are you crying?" What would he say? Because I'm not going to be buried together. It's kind of weird. It's a funny thing to say. It's not the greatest pickup line or anything, you know?
It's a funny thing that he had Ruach
Kodesh
at the Christmas.
Right, that's true. What kind of Ruach Kodesh is that? What's the point of that altogether? What's the point of him knowing that? And how exactly... Like, this Ruach Kodesh, I mean, my impression of Ruach Kodesh is that it's some sort of... It's not like a Nevuah. As Ram says, it's not like a Nevuah, but it's some sort of like divine insight, like, or a divinely helped insight. Where he's like given some sort of like a hashkacha to help him see an idea or something like that. So like, what exactly...
How could he possibly see?
Yeah, like, was...
It's not like based on anything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, what could it be based upon?
Yeah.
How could he see that? He just met her. How could he see that and I can be buried together? It just seems like, you know, some of a reach.
Well, maybe it's
sort of saying that he's going to get married to her, but their marriage
will
be short.
It will be perfect. Like,
she'll
be married
before
him. That's why they will be married together.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
Issues.
How could he not, how could he tell that, though?
Right. This seems like it's just based on other external events, like the fact that she died in childbirth. Like,
right.
How were there any factors that could we see that besides, like, right. Total nebuah?
Right. Right, and then it's just say that he's sad that she's going to die early. If that's the case, say that.
Yeah.
It's more specifically mentioning that
they're going to
be buried
together.
Yeah, but that's an indication that she's going to die early. That's why they're not buried together.
I guess, but just say that she's going to die early. Like, you know, if he has a nevuah, something or whatever, then say that she's going to die early. That's really what he's sad about. He's not sad about the
right.
burial, he's just sad about the dying early. So then just say that.
Right.
So it's true, if you know that, then, you know, but just get to the point. So he's crying because he's not early.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Back then, they used to have ways to identify if women were the type that might die in childbirth by looking at them.
But this is going, you're saying maybe?
They had science that they
really?
Could tell.
Could be, but
if
still.
You were a certain way, you would have a hard time with giving birth.
But that's like, maybe, but the whole thing is presuming that you're accepting that he was crying because she was going to die early. But that's itself not.
Well,
not
if he
so
just
so
fell
so
in love with this woman and he takes a look at her and he realizes it's going to be hard for her to conceive, it's going to be hard for her to have babies and she might die in childbirth, that's a good reason to cry. If you're
it is, but why did Rashi not saying that reason? Because even if you make that story,
right.
Rashi's not saying that. So it's like you have to say is that Rashi's, you know, you have to push that into Rashi and then you have to come up with that, you know, that story, which is no indication that he did that.
Maybe that's what Rashi's hinting at when he says that he saw that she would not be buried with him. He's saying, why wouldn't Rashi just say that outright rather than hinting to
him? Yeah. Right, so he saw that she didn't die early. If that's what he's worried about, I mean, that's a reasonable thing to be worried, to crying about, if he could somehow, you know, if he said that, then we could try to see how could he know and whatever, but
right.
He's not saying that. He's saying that she's not going to be buried with him. So you could argue that they're loosely associated, but not necessarily. I mean, can't she die early and be buried in Maris Machpelah?
Right.
And he'll be buried there years later? It doesn't have to be, unless he could see that she didn't die on the road in childbirth. Maybe she didn't die in Hebron in childbirth. And just put her right in Maris Machpelah, and then, you know. Buried early doesn't have to be on the road,
right.
So then you have to say that he could tell that. That's hard already. That's already getting harder, you know. I didn't think even they had sciences like that. Pretty strange Rashi. It's got to be up there. I mean, not a lot of strange Rashis, but this is, you know.
According to Pshat, why did he cry?
Oh, I don't know. Someone, I think Allah said maybe it just means like it was a bittersweet type of a cry. Maybe on some level, Pshat, right? There's such a thing as like he was very excited and happy, and this
yeah,
is a thing as,
like
yeah, emotional. It's like a cry, that kind of a cry. Kissed her, cried, he was very excited and happy. There's, you know, I think that's a plain, it's a pretty good shot on a plain level. I mean, it's not ordinary, like y'all mentioned these days, it's not ordinary for a guy to look right, that kind of a thing. But nor is it ordinary for a guy to just can kiss her immediately and, you know, I mean, not in our circles.
Nor is it usual for a guy who learns in yeshiva all day to be able to lift a stone off of a well.
Yeah, but it seems like I kind of hear that as being a plain shot. I think that's like, if you're doing a shot in the pasuk, why'd he cry? I think bittersweet cry is certainly a reasonable interpretation. I think these are like drash, you know, and medrash, that kind of a thing. I don't think these are really plain pshat. I mean, as I said, Svarno says because he didn't, he realized that he didn't get to marry her earlier. Unless he's like already old, so he feels like, you know, he's meeting her and she's so great and all that, and here he's like 80 something years old at this point. I think if he did work out the math, that he's pretty old. So, you know, maybe that's interesting, but it doesn't, I don't think that's pshat either, you know. Maybe it's closer to pshat than Rashi, but.
He just like realized that he wasn't put in that moment, like he didn't realize that before.
Well, he didn't really know her before. He didn't really know her before, right? So it's hard to see how he would know that, realize that.
Somehow, like meeting her allowed him to know that they wouldn't be married together.
It would seem so, right? It would seem so. Well, as strange as that sounds, it does sound like that's what he's saying, right?
Like, how is that even, like, a factor?
How could that happen?
How could meeting her even be a factor in, like,
to know that he's not going to be married with her?
Yeah. Like, you would say, like, oh, it's just Nebuah. Like, it's not based on what he's seeing in front of him. That'd be one thing. But now it sounded like somehow, like, because he saw her, like, now he knows.
Right. Well, no doubt. Like, I kind of hear it. If you knew that, it would be somewhat sad now.
You don't usually know that. So.
No. So how do you know it? How could you tell that? I say God just told him it. But first of all, it's weird. Why would God do that? Why would he kill the scene? And it's like, it just seems strange. God just gave him that piece of information at that moment. By the way, don't get too excited, you know, you can get married with her. You know, it just sounds like, it doesn't sound that sensitive, so to speak. So, could we figure out, let's just figure out a chart approach. It would be great if we could say that somehow he was able to tell, and I think, Tamara, this is what your question was, but let's go with the question and see if we can answer it. Is, could you say somehow he was able to tell by their interaction? Of course, with some sort of divine assistance, but at least there's something, could you say there's something in their meeting which would indicate to him that they're not going to be buried together? Okay? So, well, in order to say that, well, what do we know about their interaction, and then could we say that that's somehow an indication of, or a cause or something like that, of them not being able to be buried together? So what do we know about their interaction?
She took care of Laban's sheep.
Okay. Good. What else? Like, the Mara's question is, how could seeing her somehow tell him that piece of information? What? And I guess another question we could ask is, why wasn't he buried with her? Right? And that's an interesting question also. Because she's a Trefim? Oh, that's why she ended up dying early, you mean. And then, but is that, doesn't, I mean, you could say it was just a practical matter, since she died early, and they couldn't, you know, they couldn't be buried together, which is probably, on some level, which is a good argument, is, look, she died on the road, they weren't going to be able to go back and throw in whatever, but
out of respect for the mace, you're supposed to bury as soon as possible, right?
Yes, but it could be that, you know, I don't know. You know, maybe they could have put her somewhere and then buried her later. You see, they could have brought her. But I mean, arguably, say, so you know, maybe it's a practical matter. But if it's a practical matter, then it's not, it's going to be hard to really explain this thing, right? If you're just saying it's a practical matter that they couldn't do it, how could you possibly see North Korea? This is a practical matter. That's like a very, you know, maybe there's some conceptual reason why they weren't buried together. And that could somehow be discovered by him upon their meeting.
One of the things that it says about Rachel is that she was the daughter of Laban.
Yes.
It says multiple times, Achli Imo.
Nah,
that's true. But yeah, she's the daughter of Laban, and that, like, the only things about their interaction was that he kissed her, basically. He saw her and kissed her, and it doesn't seem like there was any other, like, new information.
Okay. So could the fact that he kissed her and saw her indicate any reason why they wouldn't be married together? Well, let me ask you this. You can answer that question, or you can answer this question. What's the idea of being buried together? Because isn't that like, it sounds like, what are they, like soulmates or something, and you're buried together? Like, what are they going to enjoy their each other's company in the grave? It's kind of like a... The whole thing sounds a little funny, right? I mean, we have people like that idea.
Well, why would Yaakov even care that they should?
Yeah, well, does he think that like he's gonna, they could actually have some sort of contact in the grave?
Yeah.
I mean, what is that? Like, you could hear of an emotion like that, but what's the... Who cares? Right next to you with her, with Leah, with Rachel, with Yavilla, with Zilpah, on his own. It's like lonely. He wanted to have, you know... It's hard. The whole thing sounds funny, right? Sounds like a... You know, childish type of a way of thinking about these things. You know, someone as sophisticated as Yaakov wouldn't, you know, supposed to think that somehow that matters.
Even if it's not relevant to the dead who they're buried next to, it becomes an emotional issue to the children. And I know this because if somebody remarries, there's always like a question of, are you going to be married? Buried next to the first spouse or the second one.
Yeah.
And it becomes like a very emotional thing for the children.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think, you know, there's a lot of children who end up looking up to Yaakov like it actually does matter. You know? Like it does have a symbolic impact for more than one generation.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it, you know, you've been buried
in
Ramat Machpelah and that there was a plot, you know,
probably. Because Avram, you see, made a big effort to get the plot.
That's going to be significant.
It's
going to be there with it. But that will be like the...
Okay. Like the okay, good. So, that's good. That's true. So you see, that's interesting. There is a phenomenon of Rasmach Bela, which is important. You see, it's very important. It's a big deal in the Torah, the Avram getting it, you know. Setting up a place where people could go and think about the Avos and identify with the Avos and remember the Avos. We are the children of Yitzchak and Yaakov. That's our whole identity. Right, we identify them as great people, and we model ourselves after them. And having a burial site where we could go to is helps us relate to them as real people. Now, what's interesting is that you have avos and imos, couples, in the Rosh Hashanah. You don't just have, for instance, just avos. Even though, like say, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, you see, you have imos also, right? And that was also in the Muslim Fela.
It was bought first for Sarai.
Yes, that's true. So that's interesting. Also, altogether, right? What do you make of that?
Yeah, that it was first bought for Sarai.
Yes, but what do you make of the fact that they're Ovos and Imos? They're couples. Muslim Fela is not a place for great men, for our founding fathers, but it's for our founding couples.
It's important to remember the midos of our foremothers also. And that should inspire us to act in the same way that they did.
Right. The avos are models for us, and the imos are models for us also. I mean, I guess in general, generally, avos are models for men and imos are models for women, but not necessarily. I mean, you know, midos are gender neutral, so to speak, and, you know, but in general, you think it's like they're the man, the couple functioned as a pair. Like they say, Avram was Megayer the Nashim, and Sarah was Megayer the Nashim. And they set up a household that was built around Torah and around ideas of Hashem. And as did Rivka, filled in Asar's place in her tent. And the mission of building Klal Yisrael and the ideals by which they, for which they stood, were shared. They're couples of perfection. They're not just, you know, they go down on the memories of Klal Yisrael as couples of ideas, of Kiddush Hashem, of the ideas of Torah. Not just individual people, but they set their models, role models of a family, of a husband and wife, of a pair. Right? And that's kind of the way a man functions with a woman, a woman functions with a man. They're a team. And that's part of the what's eternalized, right? So now it's interesting, isn't it, that the pair which is eternalized is Yaakov and Leah. It's not Yaakov and Rachel. Because you would think that Rachel was like his main wife. In a certain sense, I just saw Rashi in this week's parasha actually said that. He says when he looked in all the... Is it this week's parasha? Next week's parasha? Maybe last week's. It says when he looked for the trophim in the different tents. So it says he looked in the Ohel of Leah and the Ohel of Rachel. It says first he looked in... One second, let me see here. Let me see exactly how it went. So he went into Ohel Yaakov and Ohel Leah, Ohel Shtei Matzot, and then went to Ohel Rachel. So one second, it says, Rashi says, Ohel Yaakov, who Ohel Rachel? Yeah, Ohel of Yaakov was Ohel Rachel. Shehu Shayah Yaakov Tadir Etzla. Okay? Because he was more and more by her. It says, V'chein hu Omer, B'nei Rachel Eishas Yaakov. So like the wife of Yaakov, in a certain sense, was Rachel. Yes, he had four wives, but in a certain sense, she was the primary wife. Which makes sense. That's the wife he really chose. And, you know, you see, Leah was struggling to become like a real wife with all her kids and all the names and all the whatever, and she did seem to achieve something in that regard. But still, all in all, after it's all done, still Rachel was his primary wife. And it's a wife by choice. Right? And it's only through her chesed and whatever that Leah ended up even becoming a wife, according to the Chazal, right? Or, yeah, or whatever, right? So, it is interesting that Mar Machpelah, it's not Rachel. Wouldn't you think, if you were writing the story, so to speak, that Rachel would be buried there? And like, look, I understand she's Adol Beis Lachem and whatever, but I mean, God could have worked it out that it wouldn't have worked out that way, you think? Wouldn't you think that this should be? But maybe somehow Yaakov sensed right then and there that it's not going to be that way. So why not? And how could he sense that?
I don't know how he could possibly sense that. Doesn't seem very rational.
Well, we don't know why. We don't know why yet. So why is the case? Maybe it would be, once you know why, maybe we can tell how he sensed it, and maybe those two are a clue as to why.
She didn't have like a certain character trait that, like, if she had had that trait and, like, could have seen, oh, she has this trait, like, oh, maybe we are going to be buried together. And, like, now that she doesn't have it, like, oh.
It's a good question. I don't know. Well, that's probably one possible interpretation. I don't know. Right, that's certainly possible, but then I guess the question would be, what's the trait? You could go that way. Yeah. So you guys want to hear young? So maybe Mayel is on something here. That
beauty fades with age.
She's an age.
Oh, so it's like
okay. But maybe the thing is like this, is that you notice it is interesting, is that the way the relationship is characterized is as like a love at first sight relationship. Right? Now, maybe there's something more to it. Maybe he sensed her midos and whatever, possibly. But it certainly seems it's depicted in the Torah as she was beautiful. And he saw her, and he kissed her, and he loved her, and he, right? So, like, that's, which seems to be partially the case. I mean, presumably it was more than just your average love at first sight on a guy in the street. Yaakov was not just your average guy in the street. But there was a dimension, and it certainly comes off that way, as if, you know, he fell for her by seeing her, and, you know.
Isn't it similar with Yitzchak, like when Yitzchak first saw Rivka?
That's a good question. When Yitzchak first saw Rivka, if you look, he was, Chazal say that, I forgot what it's based upon, it's a deduction in the pasuk, but it says that he, this doesn't have that part, that parsha. Thank you. It says, it's interesting, is that they say he went out to daven, and let's see here. It's at the end of the parsha there, right? It's not saying, "Why you say no? Why you are being ignorant about my teacher? If you know, but Tiras Yitzchak, you tipo me alagama." Right? So it said. Oh, so they said. She said, "Who is this?" So she said, "That's my master." But tika chatzofa tischas, and she covered herself up. Right. So 1 second. Give me 1 second. Yeah, I thought someone said, you see that firstly he was davening when he saw her, but they say, why did she cover herself up? Why did she cover herself up? So you'll say maybe it's Nias, but like she's here with the Eliezer on the camel the whole time, right? So it's not exactly like what she wasn't uncovered. Right, but it seems...
She covered herself to other men because she knew that she was now raised
to the goal. Yeah, well, she knew that anyways. And this is the beginning of the decking, I think, is somehow tied to this, right? But it seems like maybe she didn't want, the relationship was not built upon the physical. His first impression of her wasn't, look how beautiful she is, right? It was, look how tzinua she is, right? And he was davening out in the field, and they, you know, it's like it wasn't a very, you know, it wasn't that type of an interaction. It was founded on tzinus and some sort of a, inwardly, you know, self. And yes, of course, there was a... and it's depicted, he brought it to his house, and he had nechama because of all these things, like Sarah, you know, the tent, and this, all these different things, but it's not depicted as he fell in love with her at first sight, you know? And by Avram Avinu also, it says, Ate dati ki shefas merat, right, when he basically went to Paro, and the different shot him, but the different shot him in that. Simple shot, and now I realize, you're beautiful. So the question, well, now he realizes, some say yes, others say no, it means that now he realizes it's important or whatever, but it seems like there was, it does seem on some level is her beauty was not so significant to him, even though she was especially beautiful, as was Rivka, because you see she was also taken by the, you know, she was especially beautiful, but it doesn't seem to be like a prominent aspect of their relationship, you know. Of course, I'm sure he was present, but in some whatever, who knows the degree. But it wasn't depicted in that way, right? But Yaakov is depicted in that type of way, right? It just seems not, you know, not that way by any of the other of us, right? And maybe that's significant. Like, you can't help it, and there's nothing wrong with it, because that's how he fell for her, and you know. And presumably there was more depth to it than just love at first sight. But at the same time, maybe he sensed, and God agreed with that sense, that that was not a relationship which was to be eternalized in the memories of Klal Yisrael. Not in the Marsha Mapela. Leah, who basically was not that type of relationship, was a relationship based upon building Klal Yisrael, based upon having the children and being a wife because of her role, her significant role in building Klal Yisrael. She was the aim, who was eternalized. The relationship between Yaakov and Leah is a relationship of building Klal Yisrael, right? Of sharely, jointly building. Yaakov and Leah were sharing and building Klal Yisrael, and that's the relationship which is eternalized in Maaseh Machpelah. But the relationship of Yaakov to Rachel, which is colored by the strong, intense, emotional beauty, love at first sight bond. You know, whether that is the full depth of it or just the way it appears. But he knew that as he had like a ambivalence about it. On the one hand, he was so excited and he kissed her. But at the same time, he knew that excitement and that intensity of emotion is not going to be eternalizing. It's going to be, he will enjoy her and he will have her as his primary wife, but he's not going to, that relationship, as special as she is, and as much as he values her, he knows that relationship is bound to not be the permanent relationship which is married. And that was in sort of upsetting them. That was saddening them. Because he loves her so much, and yet he knows that because of his great love for her, it's like self-defeating. You know, and he realizes his mission is to be involved in building Klal Yisrael. And what did he want to share with her most would be to share their eternal mission. And he knew that she would not be able, they wouldn't share, so to speak, they wouldn't be able, they had to live knowing that they were going to be, you know, that their bond was going to be limited, so to speak, to the present. And they weren't going to, look, of course, in a certain sense, it's eternalized, but not in the same way. He knew that this is not, you know, I mean, I don't know if he knew exactly how things were going to play out, and Leah, and this and that, and whatever. I mean, he didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but he had a sense that the great intensity of emotion was great, but at the same time, it's diminutive of the permanence of the relationship. And that was why there was like an ambivalence in the strange reaction of kissing her and crying. But it's because it's like they go hand in hand. The degree that the strength of the kiss is going to be the strength of the cry. You know, and if it wasn't such an intense kiss, then it would be a less intense cry, so to speak, you know. But it's, that's what, and he sensed that. That you could sense. He had an insight of the fact that, oh, this is good, but it's not so good. It's not the way it's supposed to be. You know, and it could be that's what Rivka, he saw, didn't, it was an opposite way. She knew, cover herself up. She knew that the relationship should be built upon, on the contrary. And it could be that it has something to do with our minhag of a bedecking. Some, I don't know exactly the minhag, but it's to marriage, the beginning of the marriage, we founded upon the ideals of tzniyas and covering her up and something, you know. I don't know exactly how it ties into that, but you know, that idea is somewhat of indicative of like the, there's a the more a depth to the Jewish marriage, not just the physical. So yes, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with this, with Yaakov and Rachel's relationship. There is such a thing as it, and it's a type of a relationship. But it's just saying this isn't the model which is in Maaseh Machpelah. It's not, you know. People go to Maaseh Machpelah and see the Avos, they're not supposed to think of love at first sight. And that's not the desired effect of going to Maaseh Machpelah and seeing the couples, and to be thinking of those types of thoughts. That's not what's supposed to be brought to mind. What's supposed to be brought to mind is the mission of the Avos and the Imaos. And their mission is exemplified in Leah, on the contrary. Leah exemplified it to the highest degree.
More so because he didn't love her like that?
I think so. I mean, it's like almost like, not so much necessarily because he didn't, but like, yeah, by the fact that the very strength of their relationship came because, like she kept saying, you know, Ata Yehemani Ishi, now I have a kid, he's going to love me. Now I have three kids, he's going to love me even more. Now he's going to love me even more. So he keeps saying that. Why is he going to love her so much? Because he has kids. Because that's his whole mission. His whole mission in life is building Klal Yisrael. And she's playing such a fundamental role in that, so that creates such a strong bond. So then that relationship, which indicates the foundation of their of a marriage could be that they're jointly involved in avodas Hashem. So that's a certain type of a marriage, and a certain level is an opportunity for a mutual growth in terms of building Am Yisrael. So that relationship is like a paradigm of that. I mean, it helps that he didn't love her, because that becomes the very foundation. She didn't love her until that point. So that's like, in a certain sense, like a, that is the whole substance of their relationship, which was a deep one, was based upon their joint involvement in that mission. You know? But again, it doesn't mean that rather that there's, it's interesting, there's like different models of marriage, and I don't think it's saying one is better or worse. It just is. It is a phenomenon. There's nothing Yaakov could have done about it. That's how he felt. And there's nothing wrong with it, but at the same time he knew that that's not for Maros Machpelah. You know?
A lot of the Avodah Zarah myths, like the Greek mythology, Roman mythology, is about like the love of Persephone and Orpheus. I don't know. They build a whole deity around the love between gods or whatever.
Right.
So maybe he realized that at that point, he realized that the future generations couldn't have this couple married together because it would be a bad influence, and then they would worship that love or whatever.
It's true. It's too charged, right? I mean, a strong, intense emotional love is fine. It's good in private. There's nothing to do. It's not for other people. It's something which a person should enjoy, and that's part of life. And that's an emotion, and a person should just satisfy their emotions, like all emotions. But at the same time, it's not a public emotion, and it's not something which is should be on display, and it's not something that you want to, like, yeah. It could, we don't idealize it as a value in its own right. It's part of the human nature, and God created us so we can enjoy things like that. But that's not the you know, the message of Maros Machpelah. I'm sorry. But at the same time, it is, we do know this fact. It is in the Torah. It's not like it's hidden and it doesn't exist in the Torah. It's just not from Maros Machpelah. Did Rachel know it? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe he explained to her the point. I don't know. It's certainly possible. Why not? I don't see why not. I mean, I don't know at that moment. But yeah, if she asks him, why are you crying? Could be easy to say that. Could have explained to her the idea. I don't know. It's hard to know, but I don't see why it's necessarily only for him to know, not for her. You know? And I can think of it as just good. It's like, it takes a certain type of an insight to see this point and to appreciate it and to be, at that moment, to be able to hone into that idea and to be able to, you know, think it through and to see that, you know? It's like a certain type of an insight. Yeah.
I was just thinking that later on when Rachel said to Yaakov, Havli banim v'mayim v'mesa anokhi, she was literally threatening to kill herself, and she thought that because Yaakov loves her so much, that he would be able to, like, pray, and the tefillah of Yaakov would automatically help her to have a baby. So she had, like, this concept of how powerful her his love for her was. And she used it in a way that was improper.
Interesting.
Yeah. So he had to explain to her the concept of tefillah.
It doesn't work that way. Yep, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So I'm going to tell you the Rashi. Okay? The Rashi. Separate problem. Be a little bit faster speed, but so it says he called her. She called the firstborn. She called her Reuven, right? Leah, because Ra Hashem ani, Hashem saw my affliction. Ki ata yavani ishi. Now my husband is going to love me. Right? That's pasuk perachav tas pasuk lamabet. So Hashem saw my affliction, now my husband is going to love me. Okay? So that's interesting, right? That's kind of in line with what we're explaining. But Rashi says a totally different shot. Rav Sirin Pirshu, Amra. Why did she say Reuven? Reu ma ben beni leben chami. See what's the difference between my son and the son of my mother-in-law. Okay, the son of Rivka, namely Esav. I see the difference between Reuven and Esav, my son and Rivka's first son. Shemachar b'chor Yaakov, he sold the b'chor to Yaakov. V'zel amachal Yosef, right? Esav sold the b'chor to Yaakov, right? Reuven didn't sell it to Yosef, but Yosef got it. He got the double portion. He got the role, the leadership role. But he didn't complain. Esav sold it fair and square, but Esav got upset. But Reuven didn't sell it. He just lost it somehow. Right? He lost it. But he didn't complain. Not only didn't he complain, he even tried to take Yosef out of the bed to let Yosef have the role. So Reuven, see my son, see his great qualities, how different he is from Esav, Arasha.
See those qualities in a newborn.
Right. Similar type of problem, actually, right? On some level. It's like pretty strange, this whole thing, right? She had a little kid, and that's what she says. And she knew about this? She knew about Yosef and all that? If she knew about the whole pit thing, she should have told them that in the front, you know? Hard to believe. All the whole thing. I mean, it's hard to believe that she knew at this point the whole story of all the Shvatim and all that, right? Right?
It's just a strange quality to be crazy. What a great person. He's a little bit better than Esau.
It's true, right?
He's not an Esau.
It's true. I know. You want to show the Zidkas, you don't necessarily compare him to Esau.
What'd
you say? If you want to show the Zidkas, you don't necessarily compare him to Esau.
Yeah.
It's true.
Right, it's not so admirable. He did lose the core, okay? He didn't sell it.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. He's no Hitler.
There's a whole story about if the story starts out where a mother is taking care of a very sick baby. You know the story? It's a very famous Hebrew story. Mother's taking care of a sick baby, and the baby's really very sick. And it's a snowy day, and they can't get the doctor. And the baby's like really, really sick, and she's trying desperately to find a doctor to save the baby. And then finally the doctor comes and says, Madame Hitler, your son Adolf will be fine, or something like that. So the question that you ask yourself is like, if you knew that this baby was Hitler, would you still feel bad that this baby is sick? And
That's interesting.
You know from, the future of that child.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Yeah, okay, so what do you think about this? First change Rashi, right? This is up there on the... I'm just kidding. Keep saying that, right?
It would be more effective to have a list of not change Rashi.
They're not all strange. I just like to pick the strange ones, Make for better shiur.
What if our
your ears like to complain?
There's no way that she literally realized this.
Okay, right. It would seem to say it would be the right way to go. So, she didn't really literally realize all the stuff. But then what then is she saying?
It's funny, it doesn't sound like it's saying he's so great. It's like, it's just like pointing out that he's not that.
Yeah. So what's the point of naming him? Maybe some of them are strange, yeah. They are, they're a little strange. It says the Levi is because Gavriel said and gave him this name and gave him the 24 minus Kahuna. And therefore, since he's surrounded by Matanos, he's got, I know, they're strange. And there's some of the names are kind of strange. But, you know, one at a time. So why would she give him a name like this? I mean, what's the point? Even if somehow she knows, like, what's the point? Okay, good. Good. So
like
what should he do?
He had some concerns about like a firstborn.
Okay, good.
Yeah, like by nature or something.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, good. Having certain.
Okay, good. Right.
Boys tend to be very into their place in the family order, you know? Like everybody
has that. Like your smallest mother, like they said, was no good.
Right. Right, it's true.
Usually the oldest is like, everybody has to bow before me, but in the end it was...
Right.
It was Yosef that...
Right.
So Reuben wasn't all full himself about it.
Right, okay, good. Good, yeah, so maybe just to further that thought. So, right, that there's... She realized there's a pitfall of a Bechor. Bechor is, in a certain sense, a good institution. You see that originally the Kohanim were going to be the Bechorim, right? As we were supposed to be the Avodah, was through the Bechor. And a certain sense of Bechor is good because the Bechor is naturally like a family, a leader of the family. The oldest, the firstborn, and they take on a certain role in the family. And insofar as you need a leader, the Bechor is naturally the most suitable to be the leader of the family. Assuming the Bechor is up to par. But Bechor is not up to par, and someone else is better, then it's not like a fixed rule. So, but a Bechor oftentimes feels intrinsically superior because of his Bechoros, right? And that's what Esav did. Esav basically felt superior. He even sold the Bechor to Yaakov, but still he felt superior, and still he felt like it should have been his. He sold it fair and square, but still on the Bechor. And he had a certain sense of entitlement, and that was evil. And he went after Yaakov, but he had no sense of it, and he sold it, and Yaakov was better, more fit for the position and for the role of being the leader, and the one to carry on Yitzchak's legacy, but still, it's like he was corrupted and he let it get to his head. But Reuven, and it could be, see, Rachel was sensitive to that. She noticed that, and she was sensitive to that. And she wanted to raise her firstborn son in a way with his head on straight, and not to let it get to his head. To recognize, yes, you're Bechor, and yes, you have potential for greatness, to be the leader, but at the same time, don't let it get to your head and don't feel intrinsically superior and feel like it has to be your position because you are you and you are first. It's a potential, you know, potential for greatness, but not necessarily. You got to be willing to move to let it go. And that's because of that. It could be it's tracing it because of Rachel's insight, or Leah's insight, I'm sorry, Leah's insight in the name. She raised him in that type of a way. And that's why she named him that. She wanted this idea to be prominent. And therefore, he was able to rise up and to allow Yosef to rise to the top because of Yosef's greatness. And he even wanted to help Yosef, where he could have, if Yosef would have died, could be he would have fallen back as the next guy, but he didn't. He was willing to support Yosef and to pull him out of the pit because he was able to appreciate the concept of the Bechor and the true idea of Bechor is the most appropriate leader. All things being equal, the Bechor is the best leader. But all things weren't equal, and he was able to do that. You know? So, that's interesting, right? So I was thinking, is like, maybe there's something we could take from this, is like, as parents, I mean, this seems to be what she was doing, is like, it's important to recognize, like, potential problems, or, I guess, you know, stumbling blocks, right, of our children. And potential things that could get in the way of their, you know, their growth. And to somehow, you know, not clear exactly how. It's not clear what Leah's method was even. But she was sensitive to it and raised him in a way that was able to offset that particular challenge. You know, she was aware of the problem and she was able to, you know, be sensitive to it and to be able to control it. Like, for instance, maybe if a person, for example, I don't know, let's say a person has a kid who's especially something, talented, smart, has a good voice, has a, I don't know, whatever the case is, you know? So, like, there's potential dangers in that. Like, that type of a person could be, could have great potential, and could be a leader, or it could be a whatever, a popular, and this and that. But at the same time, there are pitfalls in that type of a thing. So maybe a good parent would recognize that and recognize the potential pitfalls in it, and be able to subtly, and that's not so easy how to do it, but to subtly raise the kid in a way that, you know, like that would be best for their perfection. So it's like the role of the parents could be to identify, you see from this, identify particulars about your children and be wary of potential pitfalls, and be able to try help steer them clear of them. You know, maybe that's part of the role of a parent, is to be able to, you know, to skillfully do that. You know, it's not clear how, but sometimes, you know, just defining a goal, it sometimes helps, you know, as a first step. You know, be wary, be on your lookout for particular potential problems that you may have, just because of the birth of the birth, or because of the way they look, or the way they play sports, or the way they're smart, or the way they're, you know. Yeah.
So we're saying that Leia was insightful enough to realize the pitfalls of certain aspects of a child, and to train them in such a way that they can overcome those. Later, when Yaakov gives his son Yosef Sonis Pasim, it seems like such an obvious, glaring error in parenthood. Like, wouldn't he realize that this is going to cause such a jealousy among the brothers?
Right.
Why would he make that?
Yeah,
kind
it's a good
like
question.
An obvious mistake. Why would he make that mistake of showing favoritism to Yosef?
Right, that's a good question. Good question. I mean, Chazal do say, they do say they're critical of that.
The reason that Yaakov loved Leah is because they had such an important mission together of raising their children.
Right.
So you would think that he would be with, you know.
Right. I mean, on the one hand, there was a mistake. You see, it was a mistake. And Chazal do say, therefore, a person should never do that. Should never favor one kid over another, because you see, you know, Yaakov did that and it didn't work. On the simple shot, though, without going too deep into it, it seems like he thought, he overjudged, so to speak, misjudged, you know, the character of the Shvatim, and he thought that he wanted to make Yosef the leader. He was most suitable to be the leader, and he thought that by making a declaration of him as the leader, he would cause them all to rally around him and realize his greatness and cause him to be the real leader. And then they'd function in a greater way by, you know, building around the leader. And he thought that even though emotions are involved, he thought they'd be able to, they're at a high enough level, they're not just plain simple people. He thought that they were at a high enough level to be able to rise above that type of sibling rivalry and see the fact that he was really, and if they would, it would have been even better. Because without making him distinct, then sometimes a group could function that much better if you know who's the right leader. If you don't have a good leader, then a group can't function so well. You know, so having a proper leader could define the roles, and then they could function, you know, organize into a better entity. And that's what he's trying to do, to organize Klal Yisrael. So he thought that was a good idea. And I promise you, misjudged their level. As perfected as they are, they're still human beings, and sibling rivalry is a very, very intense emotion. And you can never underestimate that. That, you know, that's what Chazal is saying. It's even Yaakov, you know, and the Shvatim, it backfired. So a person should never do that. A person should never say, no, my kids are at a level that they're not going to, they're not. Because these are the highest level people. And you're right. But, you know, but I think that's the approach. It's like, they were great people, and it's not so clear that great people would fall to that type of a thing. In retrospect.
So they were older at the time, like.
Yeah.
Right?
They were older,
how old
yes.
was Yosef?
Yosef was 18, right?
He was already 18, so all the other brothers were older.
I think 17.
Except for Binyamin.
Yeah.
So,
right. Right. And you'd think that high level people wouldn't have these, this is like a petty thing, you know, but it's deep, strong petty thing, you know. But you could imagine, you wouldn't think Gedolim having these types of fights. What do you think, you know, you think an older brother, younger brother, are going to be Gedolim? What do you think, they're going to be involved in fighting and petty type of things? I wouldn't think so. So, I mean, yeah, kids, little kids, of course you would, but these are the greatest of the greatest people ever, you know, these are the Shvatim, I mean, they're such high-level people, you'd think that it would be beyond them. But apparently not. Apparently it's not.
I'm not so shocked with the way that the Shvatim reacted. I'm more shocked that Yaakov didn't anticipate
that. But that's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm saying. I think it should be somewhat shocking that Shvatim reacted that way, because they are, you know, if you become a little more shocked about the Shvatim reacted, then maybe you won't be so shocked about Yaakov.
Right.
But it's not so simple. I mean, it's hard to, you know, you think of Shvatim as being such great people, you know. I mean, you can understand that they did, but it's not the way we would have sibling rivalry. It's surprising. At a certain level, it's surprising.
Yeah. And Rambam, when Yaakov reacted to Rachel saying, Havli Yanim,